From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up, was the leadership of the FBI attempting a bureaucratic coup against President Trump? Comments by former acting FBI Chief Andrew McCabe on CBS's 60 Minutes regarding Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein suggests so. I'll talk with Republican Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas, a member of the House Judiciary Committee. And homeschooling, it's growing, but not for the reasons you might think. Daniel Beasley, an attorney with the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, is here a little bit later. And at the bottom of the hour, the socialist proposal du jour. We'll talk about Senator Elizabeth Warren's universal child care proposal that will cost taxpayers an estimated $70 billion a year. And I plan on hearing from you when we open up the phone lines a little later here at FRC Radio. That's FRC Radio. All right, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right, ex-acting FBI Chief Andrew McCabe said Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein had talked in 2017 about a constitutional clause, it's the 25th Amendment, that allows the removal of a president if deemed unfit. This is what he had to say on 60 Minutes.
Discussion of the 25th Amendment was simply Rod raised the issue and discussed it with me in the context of thinking about how many other cabinet officials might support such an effort. I didn't have much to contribute, to be perfectly honest, in that conversation, so I listened to what he had to say.
Also in that conversation, Rosenstein had said he would wear a wire. Now, later joked about it, said he wasn't serious, but not according to McCabe. Well, to put this story into perspective, my next guest, Republican Congressman Louie Gohmert, he represents the 1st District of Texas. He serves on the House Judiciary Committee and the House Natural Resources Committee. Louie, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Always good to talk to you.
Well, I'm interested in your perspective because you've been tracking this thing from the start and have been very vocal about raising concerns about what was happening at the FBI. Are you surprised by McCabe's, I would say, confessions?
I'm surprised that he's so stupid that with a criminal investigation over his head, having been in criminal investigation for 21 years like he says he has, and he's out there making statements that can and will be used against him. That's just not smart. As somebody writing a book and hawking a book right before they may go to prison, it's serious stuff. And as far as Rosenstein, he has been, in my opinion, very dishonest a number of times in his testimony before the committee. And, you know, for him to have made the condescending statements previously about, he said this to me when I asked if he had signed the application for the FISA warrant, the last one. He said, well, I don't think you understand how this works. Well, I know if you signed something and submitted it to the court and you knew it was not completely true, then you've committed a fraud upon the court. That's basically what we dealt with him. But then he has said before that if somebody signs something that's not accurate, there'll be consequences, yet he has fought like crazy to keep there from being consequences. And as far as his threat to wear a wire, you remember when it first came up, I thought his reaction would be do like he has before and just say, oh, no, that didn't happen. Instead, he says, oh, well, yeah, obviously it happened, but I was only kidding. Well, we knew he wasn't kidding because even before McCabe spoke up on 60 Minutes, I'd understood from other sources that there was at least a second meeting where Rosenstein brought this up and said, look, I wasn't kidding. I'm serious. I'll wear a wire. Now, why would he do that again? And McCabe confirmed that. Why would he do that again? Clearly, they were all serious about taking down President Trump in a coup, whatever you want to call it. You take down a duly elected president, it is a coup. But obviously, as I'd heard, they were giving Rosenstein a very hard time about helping Trump when he did the memo that formed the basis of Trump firing Comey. And basically riding him hard, you gave them what they needed to fire Comey. You're helping Rosenstein. Hey, look, I'll wear a wire if I need to. I want to help. I'm a team player. He was trying to convince the other conspirators that he was a team player and a true blue conspirator, too.
Well, Louis, let me ask you about that when it comes to the memo on Comey. Was he just trying to feed more rope or lay a trap for Trump by participating in that?
Yes. As far as the memo, I think he felt like he needed to do a truthful memo to Trump. I mean, the things that he put in there were extremely obvious. Everybody knew that Comey had used extremely poor judgment, and Rosenstein would have looked like a complete idiot to say anything other than that Comey was a problem. And obviously, he was leaking things that he shouldn't. So hopefully there will be a time when there are consequences for both Rosenstein and Comey and McCabe and Lisa Page, and especially the lion Peter Strzok.
Now, Louis Gohmert, Senator Lindsey Graham, who chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee, has vowed to investigate allegations that what he described was a bureaucratic coup. Do you think there's something there?
Absolutely. These guys hated Trump. They wanted Hillary Clinton to win. And obviously, they felt like when they talked about an insurance policy, they wouldn't say what they want to now. But at the time, it was very clear. They needed an insurance policy just in case Trump wanted to take him out. And that's what the Russian dossier was about. That's what the FISA warrants were about. They were needing any information they could get to try to take him down. They were already wiring his campaign basically through the people that had worked for the campaign, just like Trump had said. So what's one more step to wear a wire into the Oval Office to try to take the president? I mean, they've already conspired and been in so many efforts that they had undertaken to bounce him out.
What was the motivation?
Further into their coup. What was the man?
For what? I mean, before he was really an unknown quantity when it comes to conservative policies until he was elected.
Well, I think. You and I know we talked about this at length back during the campaign. And if you go far enough back, I mean, really, he was much more helpful to Democrats than he was to Republicans. And I think, Tony, I think that is one of the things that galls these Democrats, some of them, so badly, is that he was one of them, and now he's a Republican. And just like whether it's
I would call him a conservative who is advancing conservative ideas. I would put him to the right of most Republicans.
True, but
what scares them is that he actually is doing what he said he was going to do, which is something that's unknown at that level.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you took a list of presidents since 1948 and said, which one of these presidents is going to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, Donald Trump would probably be way down on your list. And yet he's the guy that said to his advisors, I know, you don't think I should do it, but I'm going to do it. It's the right thing to do. So that scares them that this guy is not part of the deep state. He doesn't understand that he's not supposed to do what he promised. And same with the wall. He hadn't gotten the message, you know, from the deep state folks.
This sure fuels all those conspiracy theories and such about the deep state and about those that control the levers of government, because this president, uncontrolled by those, scares a lot of of people. Let me ask you this question. So just for the benefit of our listeners, and I sure. should have mentioned when I brought you on that you also you were a state judge. You sat on the bench yep. as a judge in the state of Texas. And,
yep.
and when you decided you want to do legislation, you got off the bench, unlike many judges, and
right.
you ran for Congress successfully, and you've been there now for a yep. number of years. The 25th Amendment, explain that. There was a lot of discussion. People heard about that. The 25th Amendment.
Well, the 25th Amendment came into being when people realized we simply can't afford to have another situation like there was with Woodrow Wilson, where he apparently had a stroke, something devastating. He was not able to carry out the duties of his office. So his wife was basically acting president at the end of his term as president. And so let's have a 25th Amendment so that if a president is not capable of doing the job, then he could be removed, somebody else named to step in and fill the spot. But it was, and Alan Dershowitz has explained this very well, this was never intended to be a way to remove a president with whom people did not agree. And, you know, Tony, back after, I guess it was the end of August, early September, when I met with Donald Trump candidate, the last thing I said, and by the way, you know, if you look at the presidents that have gotten the most done on the international scene, it was people that were deemed to be a little bit crazy, whether it's Teddy Roosevelt or Ronald Reagan, and the people that were shouted as being, oh, they're the brilliant, the intellects, like Woodrow Wilson and John Kennedy. They didn't do so well in international relations. And he said, well, they say I'm crazy. I said, that's why I think you've got a chance to be one of the best president on foreign relations we've ever had. And I think he's proving that out.
Louis, before we run out of time here, quickly, with all that's happened in the FBI, Department of Justice, new attorney general coming in, do you think yeah. that he's going to be able to restore the confidence of the American people in the Department of Justice and in the FBI?
Well, Tony, I have the hope that springs eternal in the human breast, but he's buddies with Mueller. Mueller should have been investigated, not doing the investigation. And Rosenstein, his big buddy, they were working together on the Russia investigation before there was ever a candidate Trump. And they covered that up so that Hillary could rake in $145 million for her thing. So I'm hopeful, but I'm not counting on it.
All right. As always, Congressman Louis Gohmert, great to talk with you. Thanks for stopping by today.
You bet, Tony. Anytime.
All right. Congressman Louis Gohmert of Texas. This really is something to watch. I mean, I know all these names, different positions and everything, it can be kind of confusing the way this whole thing was unfolding. But, you know, where there, you know, the old saying, where there's smoke, there's fire. There are some real deep-seated problems at the FBI and the Department of Justice, and hopefully, it'll get cleaned out. All right, you're listening to Washington Watch. Coming up next, homeschooling. It's growing, but why? We'll talk about it next. Don't go away.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. Right, the percentage of families deciding to educate their children at home has nearly doubled over the last two decades. In full disclosure, we have homeschooled our children, our five children, all the way through. We still have a couple in the pipeline, but just about finished. And while, you know, for us, it was a combination of factors, but in the beginnings, it was more religious concerns. That used to be the top motivator. But that's not what is driving the rapid increase in homeschooling families today. The most important reasons for homeschooling in 2016, according to some surveys, was a concern about the school environment, such as safety, drugs, negative peer pressure, and, of course, the crazy radical agendas that are being thrust upon these kids, even at younger and younger ages. But the government is not letting go of the kids easily. There is now an intense effort. Now, this has always been a factor, but it's increasing. And that is government regulation of homeschool families. Joining us now to explain how and where this is happening is Dan Beasley, an attorney with the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. Dan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, Dan, I know this is something that Homeschool Legal Defense, who I've worked with in the past as a legislator on homeschool issues, this is something you're always watching for. But would you say that it's increasing as more kids are leaving the schools? Government is trying to reach out and grab them?
We have seen an increase over the last couple of years. Of course, the trend really since homeschooling reemerged in the 1980s, really even over the last decade, has been cutting unnecessary red tape and regulation. But over the last couple of years, we have seen some pretty significant proposals that would add regulation, add red tape on homeschooling families, on all homeschooling families. So that is a trend that we're watching. It's certainly something that we're watching across the country. And letting our members know when we see bills and proposals that would add regulation and restriction on homeschooling families.
I mean, we've seen regulations where they want to come in, they want to do home visits to check out whether or not you have appropriate fire codes. I mean, they're just, it looks like they're trying to invent reasons to come into the homes. But I think it's bigger than that. My take on this, Dan, is that this is really designed to create barriers and obstacles so that parents will just throw up their hands and say, oh, it's not worth it?
Yeah, well, we've seen some pretty significant proposals, as you mentioned, over the last couple of years. You mentioned a couple of them. Even this year in Iowa, there's a proposal that would require quarterly visits. I've heard a suggestion in the state of Georgia that would require monthly visits for homeschooling families. And there's often a particular reason for each of those proposals, but there is a broader ideological difference behind a lot of the proponents of this legislation. A lot of them just aren't fans of homeschooling, and you know, we can't always say why these proposals are introduced, but we certainly oppose restrictions on homeschooling that limits a parent's flexibility to determine what's best for their children and to provide the best education that they can.
Now, Dan, when you look at parents that are making this choice, it is easier when they work with other associations and other families that have homeschooled because they can kind of show them the ropes on this. How does Homeschool Legal Defense explain to our listeners how you as an association help facilitate parents who want to teach their children at home?
Sure. Well, HSLDA exists to make homeschooling possible. We do that by supporting homeschooling families and by advocating for good homeschool policy. A couple of different ways that we do that. One would be assisting with the legal questions surrounding compliance, giving families a peace of mind that they can homeschool legally, and if that right to homeschool is questioned, or if they face more nuanced issues with bureaucracy, school officials, other government officials, we're there to help them with those issues. On the practical side, we have educational consultants that can help equip parents to be the best home educators that they can be. A lot of resources there as well. And then we also have an online academy that can help with some courses where parents may not be fully comfortable providing all of that instruction on their own. And another emerging area is issues of discrimination as well. Homeschool graduates who face discrimination from employers, from some colleges, although homeschooling is well recognized and often colleges are recruiting homeschool graduates.
Absolutely.
There are isolated incidents where a particular school administrator just doesn't understand the law, an employer may not understand the law, sometimes it's background check companies, and so we're able to provide those graduates with assistance and ensure that they have a clear pathway to success.
I know a lot of the military academies actually looking for homeschooled students just because of not only academic standards, but the discipline as well. Dan, just before we run out of time, what are some of the most egregious policy laws that are not laws, it would be bills that have been introduced that you're watching and in what states so that our listeners can be aware?
Sure. So Iowa right now has a bill that would require quarterly visits from school officials. That's one certainly to watch. There was one in Illinois that just died that would have also required social workers to visit every homeschool family. There are threats of bills in other states that are certainly out there. There are certainly bills that have more specific tinker a little bit with more minor details, but those are some of the big ones. Really, the important thing is to keep your eye open for emails from us, because when something comes up, we like to take action quickly and make sure people know about it, because sometimes there's not a lot of time.
Right. And you got to nip it in the bud, as Barney Fife would say. Dan
That's
Beasley,
right.
Thanks so much for joining us. And we do appreciate all that Homeschool Legal Defense does.
My pleasure. Thank you again for having me.
Okay. To find out more, folks, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you homeschool, or thinking about it, it is a good resource. It is a good resource. And they do work with state legislatures to ensure that your right as a parent, I hate to say that, but that your right as a parent is protected, because it is your right. It's not a right granted to you by government. It is given to you. It is a responsibility given to you by God. And you choose. You choose how you're going to educate your children. And I might talk about that a little bit more on the other side of the break, but I also want to talk about the liberal proposal du jour, Senator Elizabeth Warren and her universal child care. This is problematic on many fronts, and we're going to talk about that, as well as the president's trip to Miami yesterday. That's coming up next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, and I am glad you're with us, and we're having more fun than human beings should be allowed to have. We're going to get to the phone calls a little bit later, so stand by. We are going to, I am going to take phone calls, FRC Radio, in just a little bit. But first, I want to talk about the liberal proposal du jour. I mean, they're coming out so rapidly. Everybody, every socialist, every Democrat, every liberal seems to be running for president. And so they've got to come out and trump one another with their liberal policies. Well, but before I get into the details of Elizabeth Warren's universal child care plan that she released today, before I get into the details of it, I want you to hear just a brief clip from President Trump, who was in Miami yesterday, basically challenging Venezuela and, you know, these other communist regimes, socialist regimes. But I want you to listen to what he says, and then I'm going to dissect Elizabeth Warren's proposal. Let's play, Bobby, play clip number 5.
As we meet today, the people of Venezuela stand at the threshold of history, ready to reclaim their country and to reclaim their future. Not long ago, Venezuela was the wealthiest nation by far in South America. But years of socialist rule have brought this once thriving nation to the brink of ruin. That's where it is today. The tyrannical socialist government nationalized private industries and took over private businesses. They engaged in massive wealth confiscation, shut down free markets, suppressed free speech, and set up a relentless propaganda machine, rigged elections, used the government to persecute their political opponents, and destroyed the impartial rule of law. In other words, the socialists have done in Venezuela all of the same things that socialists, communists, totalitarians have done everywhere that they've had a chance to rule. The results have been catastrophic. Almost 90% of Venezuelans now live in poverty. In 2018, hyperinflation in Venezuela exceeded 1,000,000%. Crippling shortages of food and medicine plague the country. Socialism has so completely ravaged this great country that even the world's largest reserves of oil are no longer enough to keep the lights on. This will never happen to us.
That's President Trump yesterday in Miami. And I wanted to play that before I go to the socialist proposal du jour. And that is Elizabeth Warren's universal child care plan. Now, this limits Americans' family expenses for child care to like 7% of income, regardless of how many children they have in care. And it's paid for by a tax on the wealthy. All right? This is a major redistribution of wealth. Now, let me kind of give you the details. Your child care is free for families with incomes below $51,000 if they, a family of four. That's two kids. All right. And then it's graduated up to where you would pay no more than 7% of your income. Now, this is a major, again, redistribution of wealth. Now, they say the average cost of child care in the United States is approaching $1,400 a month. I'm not saying that's not a significant amount of money. I mean, it is. Of course, part of that is where the government is driving more people to have to work outside the home. I think our policies, like we've promoted at the Family Research Council, is the child tax credit, which was expanded in the most recent tax rewrite. Well, here's the price tag, though. It's going to cost taxpayers $70 billion. That's with a B, per year. Now, how would they pay for that? I mean, look, and if they say it's going to be $70 billion, you know it's going to be more. I mean, we're talking about maybe $1 trillion. Now, how do we pay for that? Well, her proposal would be paid for with some of the revenue that is generated from her annual wealth tax that she has proposed on certain families. Now, this is a 2%. Her wealth tax is a 2% tax on family assets in excess of $50 million. Now, that's not income. So that'd be every year you're getting this tax if you have assets over $50 million. If you are at the billion-dollar mark, it is 3%. Roughly, that's 75,000 families that are affected by this. Oh, well, that's only 75,000 families. You remember the story, the fable told as a kid, the goose that laid the golden egg? You know, that goose is laying a golden egg and the guy gets greedy. The leader gets greedy and he wants to cut open the goose and get all of the eggs and destroys the very thing that is producing. That's what we're talking about here. People that have wealth generate wealth for others. I'm certainly not in that category. I'm not going to pay this tax. But I don't think those people should have to pay a tax. It's a redistribution of wealth. They've been successful. Why can't we celebrate their success? They create jobs. They spend that money. They invest that money. They give that money away. Why should the government take it and redistribute it? Now, that's only one aspect. When we come back, I'm going to talk about the other aspect that concerns me, and that is what the money will be used for. And then we're going to take your phone call. So don't go away. More Washington Watch to come right here. Don't touch that dial. We're coming right back with more Washington Watch right after this message.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you are listening to Washington Watch, and the website is tonyperkins.com. All right, let me put a plug in for this before I forget. This coming Sunday, that is the 24th of February, I'll be at First Baptist Church in Bossier for the morning service, and then Congressman Mike Johnson and I will be doing a seminar, kind of a God and Government seminar, beginning at 4 o'clock. It will go through 4 o'clock Sunday afternoon to about 9 o'clock Sunday evening. To find out more, you can go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and follow the links over. But, again, that's at First Baptist Bossier. If you're in the driving distance from the Bossier-Shreveport area this Sunday, that's in Louisiana, check out the website, tonyperkins.com. Okay, before I go to the phone lines, and they're starting to light up, 866-372-7234, FRC Radio, 866-FRC-Radio. I want to go back to this very quickly. I want to wrap this up. Two big concerns I have with Elizabeth Warren's liberal socialist proposal du jour, the universal child care plan. Number one is the redistribution of wealth. Okay? That penalizes people who are successful. It takes from those who have, and it gives to those who, you know, and I'm not saying people are not working, and I'm not saying that child care is not difficult. I get it. I've had five kids. But part of it, my wife has chose to step partially out of the workforce. She worked part-time to homeschool our kids. And then also one of the things we've been working on, is to encourage employers to provide child care in their work facilities. And a lot of small businesses are very accommodating there. And those, we should do that through tax incentives for businesses to keep the parents with their children, children with their parents. That works much better. That leads me to my second concern of what this proposal leads to. It leads to more government indoctrination of children. Now, don't think that they're just going to give you, you know, the money to send your kid to a daycare of your choice. I guarantee you it will have to be a government-approved daycare that a child care facility that meets certain standards that the government sets, and they will not be standards that you and I agree with. I can almost promise you that this will exclude churches and other religious child care facilities from being included in this. This is about getting children in the government pipeline earlier and earlier. Now, that said, I'm not saying every person who promotes early childhood education is pushing a leftist government agenda. Not all are doing that. Some truly are for the well-being of the children, early education, so on and so forth. But the best place for a child is with the parents. And those formative years are very important. But my overarching concern is that when you look at the curriculum that we're seeing in today's schools that run 180 degrees, completely counter to what the parents are teaching their children, especially when it comes to the issue of human sexuality, this is not a good thing. And believe me, we do not want the government getting their grip on our children earlier. In fact, we want to break the grip and get our children away. That's why we need educational choice. We need to get children out of government schools, not creating schools and government programs for younger ages. All right, we're going to go to the phone lines. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Brian in Asheville, Ohio. Brian, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony, and God bless you for what you do. I'm a first-time caller, and I listen to you every day on my way home from work. But one of the things that you just said about redistribution of wealth is just hitting the nail right on the head. That is a total farce. And I like to ask some of my friends when they bring some of this up, I say, hey, have you ever worked for a poor man? I said, it is truly the rich that keep the rest of us in the middle class going.
You're absolutely right. They create the jobs. I'm certainly not angry about that. I don't think we should be envious. I think we should strive harder and be smarter. And if we want to take, I think I was having this conversation with my kids this weekend. You know, it's better to, if you can, if you want to lead and have a business. We were talking about how when you have a business and you have multiple people working for you, you create wealth. You create wealth for them. You create wealth for yourself. But you have to bear the burden of the responsibility of that. And so,
absolutely. And I would encourage our readers or our listeners to read 2 Thessalonians 3:10-14. It's exactly what the Lord is trying to tell us, that we need to work and we need to strive to be better, just like you said. And there's nothing wrong with the rich man. I'm grateful for him because, like you said, they're the ones that create the jobs.
Well, Brian, thanks so much for listening, and thanks for being a first-time caller. Look, I think part of this redistribution is also part of creates selfish envy and strife between the classes. I mean, that's the thing that's great about America, unlike some countries where you're born into a certain class and you're stuck there. You don't have the opportunity to grow, to expand, to seize opportunities and gain wealth. That's why so many people come to America. America is still the land of opportunity. If we work hard, we're smart, we apply ourselves. I say smart, taking advantage of the opportunity. Doesn't mean you have to have a college degree or a doctorate. You just got to seize moments of opportunity. And obviously, a lot of that is timing. But I still believe what God's word says, you know, that he blesses those who, you know, if we apply ourselves, if we work, we seek first the kingdom of God. Obviously, we don't want to set our eyes on riches. As Proverbs says, you set your eyes on riches. Why do that? They fly away. We need to have the proper balance. But creating jobs is actually beneficial to others. And I'm grateful for those who take the risk, invest the capital, put it all on the line, and create jobs and opportunity for other people. That's a good thing. We shouldn't discourage it by somehow penalizing those people by making them pay additional taxes. They're already paying a lot of tax. This is additional. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Daniel in Baton Rouge. Daniel, how you doing?
Hello. Hello, Brother Perkins. How you doing, sir?
I'm fine. You? How are you?
Thank you. Doing fine. And happy Purim. You know the story about Esther, how she helped save the Jews? Okay.
Yep.
Yes, sir. And my comment is about the story about the concealed carry person who helped save a life of the cashier at the Family Dollar. There was a robbery, and the person with the concealed carry stopped the robbery and actually shot the person dead, and they were not condemned by the police because, you know, they didn't do anything. They were just trying to help save a life. So in the case of, like, abortion and stuff, maybe I'm just going to run this by you, you know, maybe it's possible for people to help save a life and not be held criminally. Like what if you wrestled somebody down or an abortionist, or at least by the least use of force up till use of deadly force to protect innocent life? I mean, what is about that? What do you think about that?
Well, Daniel, I think that, first off, I don't think that we use force in that setting. I think let me step back. When you're in law enforcement, or even someone, for instance, this concealed carry, you go through a training, and there's a continuum that you go through. You can only use certain force with certain force in certain situations. Where we need to be as a nation is educating our friends, our neighbors, and returning back to an understanding of the sanctity of human life. And I actually I wrote about this recently. I haven't published it yet, but, you know, when we all know the Declaration of Independence in the preamble, where it says that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, we're all very familiar with that, but when it goes on to the second paragraph, and it talks about how, you know, we create government by consenting to it. And in our form of government, we consent to the laws that we have. And under, well, I would say because of apathy, because of indifference, because many Christians have not been involved, we have allowed laws like this to be adopted and passed. And so there's no way we cannot justify taking actions like some. I completely condemn the use of violence against, abortionists, abortion clinics. I think that's wrong. Those that have bombed those clinics, those that have assaulted abortion doctors, that's not justified. I think it's wrong. I think what we need to do is that we need to be engaged in the process of changing our laws that through the means that is afforded to us as Americans. And I think this is something that pastors should be speaking out on when it comes to the sanctity of human life and speaking to their congregations, because by our silence, we're consenting to laws like that in New York and those being proposed in Virginia that literally bring us to the point of infanticide. So I think it's we cannot jump to that point because we have not been obedient in being good Christian citizens with the opportunities that we have. So, Daniel, it's a good question. I appreciate you calling in and listening. But under no condition do I believe we as Christians should use violence against those that are doing something that is morally wrong, but we have allowed to become legally right because of our indifference to being involved in the process. We are very close, folks. Don't get discouraged at all by what we see happening. I mean, there is a resurgence, if you will, of the left to try to inscribe abortion into the indefinitely in our culture, as we're seeing what happened in New York. But They're very close to losing this debate. Very close. I believe that if we do not lose heart and we continue to love people, women in crisis, through our culture, through our pregnancy care centers, we continue to advocate and support, like President Trump and his selection of constitutionalists for the courts. We continue to elect pro-life lawmakers. We'll be there sooner than you think. All right, let's go work in a couple more calls here. Let's go to Gloria in Tennessee. Gloria, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate you taking my call. I listen to you on a daily basis, and I most definitely do not want to take up your airtime. I have so many issues to address, but one is my heart is reflecting my nation. And I want to thank you for your ministry and the very truth that you deliver, because I have only a local station to listen to, and I need the truth, and I stay in touch with Christian organizations. My heart cry, the reason I'm calling is because I'm aching for the loss of my nation, I think. We are losing battle here, and Christ has won the battle, and we're living, the church is living like it's lost. The battle has been lost. But I have so much to say, like I said, from one end to the other, but I just want to thank you and your ministry and your truth. Deliver your truth on a daily basis to all my little community in Somerville. And so,
Gloria. I appreciate that so much. Thanks for listening and for calling in. And that's a really good point that you bring up, that and it's so true that despite what we see around us, we have gained the victory. It was given to us. Jesus gained the victory. And that's where I think we have to be very careful not to be persuaded by what we see. Faith is the evidence of things not seen. It's, in fact, what we need to look beyond what our eyes can see to see what God has said actually is. And that's what sustains us when we are in these times where the culture is moving one direction, the country is moving a direction that is contrary to truth and to righteousness. But we see rays of hope. There's reasons to be encouraged. And God has entrusted this time to us. But it begins with each and every one of us recognizing Jesus Christ as the Lord of our lives. And with that, we know we cannot fail because our future is secure. Gloria, again, thanks for the call. Folks, sorry I didn't get to the rest of the calls, but Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow night, and I hope you will as well. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.